argument in the second case of the morning, which is appeal number 07-1028, Ofome versus Kiesler.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Richard Trace on behalf of the petitioners, Olufunmi and Ajani Olufunmi, counsel. This matter comes before the Court on a petition to originally arising out of a motion to reopen a case where the both respondents had allowed themselves to be granted voluntary departure through the efforts of their counsel. And in reviewing the matter, it seems that they made a very, very grave mistake in doing this, and without proper, I believe, proper understanding of the consequences of this relinquishment of their right to a trial, a hearing, confronting witnesses, asserting their claims to adjustment of status and maintaining status in the United States. What was omitted from the discussion, I believe, was any reference to the ability to return to the United States. And under present laws, that a person who's here unlawfully for more than 1 year cannot return for 10 years. They're barred. So it seems from the face of it, from the face of this particular voluntary departure order, that there was no benefit at all to be gained by the respondents. They can't return for 10 years, and they gain nothing by this, and had a great deal to assert in their effort to remain here. The young man, who's now 26, was here since he's 14 years old. That's Oluwole Olufunmi, the son. He had been brought here by his father and the stepmother who had petitioned for him, and he arrived here, I believe, in 1995. Has been here ever since. And if there's any fraud alleged between the father and the stepmother, none of that would reflect upon the son. He was 14 years old at the time in Nigeria. Pardon me. And for him to allow himself to give up all his rights and accept the voluntary departure grant was very destructive. And I believe the lawyer and should have informed him, and I think there's no evidence that he did, and there's an assertion by both the father and the son in their affidavits that they knew nothing of that. And it almost appears as if they really didn't understand the consequences of what they had done. Because, nobody in the right mind would do this.
Do any of these asserted procedural mistakes make any difference here? Because we have a finding that the father's marriage was a sham, and we have suspicious timing of the son's marriage on the eve of removal, right? And a failure of the son to present any evidence at all or come forward or proffer any evidence that the marriage was bona fide. So is any of this going to make any difference?
Well, in the 3 points you raised, first of all, I think the son did raise some issues, some evidence, assert some evidence that the marriage was bona fide. There was a lengthy statement by the his wife, his present wife, that they'd known each other for several years, and they may have not a lot of documents, but they're both college students and recent college graduates at Northern Illinois University, and attempted to make a life together and had to submit the document rather hastily. As far as the marriage fraud allegation, I'm not so sure that was ever really proven, because as recent as 2004, the government had sustained this marriage in a I-360 widower's petition and had found the marriage valid enough to approve that petition.
Even after he already married?
He was married way back in the...
And didn't he present a false divorce certificate?
There was allegations of that, but that would be a fraud apart from marriage fraud, that there's waivers for that particular issue in an adjustment hearing. But that doesn't mean, in my understanding, that the marriage itself is fraudulent. There may be problems in asserting his application on a 485 adjustment of status application, and that there may be grounds of
inadmissibility. In other words, he can marry a second person. even though he's already married and no valid divorce.
I'm not sure that that has been totally established.
Well, if it was that, is that a fact?
That would presume that the marriage is bigamous and illegal and should not be approved. That's correct. But the marriage was approved. The marriage was approved as recent as 2004 in the widow's petition, the widower's petition, by the service, after they had all the evidence. And they only recently made efforts to reverse that finding by saying it's come to our attention. There's some information that might indicate that the marriage is not bona fide without any evidence being established by the government. That matters on appeal in itself. So what I'm saying is the two marriages, one has been recently confirmed by the government. That's the father's marriage. And the son's case obviously rested upon that marriage, and that's how he got to America.
Well, the father's marriage was declared by the INS to be fraudulent before Yvonne, the second wife, passed away, as I understand it, right?
That's correct.
And so we have a contradictory grant of a widower's visa?
That's correct. That's correct. I think there's a lot of evidence on both sides. And whether the government didn't look into it fully enough, I'm not sure. I don't know what they did. But the most recent finding was that it was approved. They had a lot of rights to assert. That's my basic claim here. In the judge's memorandum of order, there's only a note saying that the fraud charge was relinquished in some sense. I'm not sure if they're talking about the marriage fraud or fraud in terms of bringing a phony document. But also missing in the judge's order is any indication that the applications for relief were abandoned or withdrawn, which is usually the case. If, in fact, you have voluntary departure, you'll withdraw your application for asylum, withholding, or what have you. But in this case, there's no reference to that at all. I don't think it was a full hearing. And for the judge, in his opinion, in the motion to reopen, saying that it was fully discussed, I think it should have been on the record. What was the discussion? What was the bargain? Certainly in a criminal trial, we'd have all of that. Was it freely and voluntarily given? I don't think there was enough here. And I think it was hastily done. I think the lawyer didn't do his job. And I think these particular respondents are suffering. If there are no other questions, thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Sherry Begay for the Attorney General. There are two issues before the Court today. The first issue is whether the Board abuses discretion in finding that equitable tolling was not warranted in this case. And the second issue is whether petitioners have a valid due process claim based on their ineffective assistance of counsel claim. And in this case, as you know, Mr. Olufumi's adjustment of status applications were denied, and his son's adjustment was revoked after the fraud finding. However, when they agreed to voluntary departure, DHS agreed to drop the fraud allegations against Mr. Olufumi. And petitioners are now claiming that they were not aware of the consequences of voluntarily departing. And with regard to the first issue in this case, there was no abuse of discretion by the board. Petitioners have only made assertions against their prior counsel. They haven't provided any evidence in support of their claim. They have also failed to show any due diligence in this case or any prejudice in the outcome of their case because of their petitioner's alleged action, because of their counsel's alleged actions. And with regard to the second issue before the court today, petitioners do not have a valid due process claim, and this is for several reasons. First of all, the Supreme Court has held that there's no right to effective assistance of counsel in civil proceedings. And even if there were such a right in this case, petitioners, as I've said, have not presented any evidence in support of their claim, and they have not shown prejudice or due diligence. As the board noted in this case, they haven't rebutted any of the immigration judge's findings with regard to the circumstances surrounding their acceptance of the voluntary departure order. In this case, as the immigration judge noted, their counsel spoke to them about the order, They also were provided with copies of the order, and they said that they have no questions. And they don't deny any of this. They simply assert that they weren't aware of the consequences. However, they're not presenting any evidences to show that their counsel acted ineffectively by advising them that this is the best strategy for their case. They have also not shown any due diligence in pursuing their claim. And as noted by the board, they haven't explained why they allowed the 90-day tolling period to 90-day time limit to run for a motion to reopen. And although they assert that they weren't aware of this alleged error by their counsel until June 20th when they received a Department of State notice, they didn't explain how this notice, as opposed to prior notices, triggered their discovery. The prior notices they received were very detailed, and this particular notice only stated that the lead petitioner's I-360 application was being returned to USCIS, which was actually denied. This was actually denied on May 4, 2007. It was revoked. And they don't actually explain why this particular notice, as opposed to prior notices, triggered their discovery. And with regard to showing of prejudice in this case, there's no evidence in the record that their counsel acted improperly. And, in fact, there appears to be evidence supporting it appears that their counsel acted properly in this case by advising them that voluntary departure was the best.
Counsel didn't get any notice either, did he?
I'm sorry?
Counsel didn't receive notice that he was being charged with ineffective assistance here.
Well, they did file something in July against their counsel.
But did counsel actually receive notice of that and an opportunity to respond and explain his position?
I don't believe that there was any response. I mean, I know that there was an investigation, but I don't believe that the counsel ever really, it doesn't appear that they actually received notice, but there was an investigation, allegedly, of the counsel's prior actions, but I don't believe that there was any response. And moreover, in this case, as I've mentioned earlier, the fraud allegations were dropped against the lead petitioner when they agreed to voluntary departure, and they don't have any issue with that. They don't contest that. They just simply assert that they didn't understand the consequences, yet they had these allegations dropped, and they agreed to have these allegations dropped in return for voluntary departure.
Can you explain the anomaly of a widower petition being granted on the basis of a marriage that has been found to be fraudulent?
I'm not quite sure why this was granted in this case. I do know that their I-260 was revoked May 4th, 2007. I don't know the exact reason why it was revoked, but I assume it is because of the fraud finding. We did follow up with DHS, and we were told that it was May 4th, 2007. They do have an appeal right now at the Administrative Appeals Office, but I do know that it was revoked. And with regard to the other claim in this case, the due process claim that was raised by petitioners, even if there is a right to counsel in civil proceedings, they have not shown, as I've stated, any type of evidence in support of their claim of ineffective assistance of counsel. They have also failed to present any evidence to show that they were diligent in pursuing their claim. And also, there hasn't been any prejudice shown, particularly with regard to the lead petitioner in this case, because had the merits of his case been considered, they would be denied because of the prior fraud finding. He wouldn't be eligible for any benefits under the Act. And in conclusion, the petition for review in this case should be denied. There has been no abuse of discretion, and the board properly found that equitable tolling was not warranted in this case. If there are no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tress.
Thank you. Just a couple of matters. There may not be a criminal right, Sixth Amendment right to counsel, but there's a due process right recognized by the matter of Lozada on the BIA, which this court has recognized as well. I think that's well established. And as far as Your Honor's question, we did file, in the record, it shows that a complaint was filed with the IRDC.
It was filed with the Illinois.
That's correct.
Disciplinary committee, but you have to pre-filing give the attorney notice of the deficiencies you're going to be claiming, give him an opportunity to respond, don't you?
Well, I believe he should be, but in the process of that filing, that's part of the investigation at the ARDC, and they send that to the attorney. That's a matter of course. And as a procedural matter, I think the best way is to handle that is to let the ARDC notify them directly and give an exact copy of the affidavit that the respondent submits, rather than something outside of that, which might be actually different than the complaint being made. And I think that all has to work within the ARDC complaint system that's set up.
Okay. Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we proceed.